Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Tai, and in for Greg Matzik, it's Adam Roberts.
Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday to you, Adam.
Happy Friday to you, Jessica.
We've got a big show today. We're going to take you inside the courtroom as that verdict came down in the big Judge Hannah Dugan case. What did Judge Dugan look like as the verdict was read? What about the jury? Also, looking ahead to tomorrow night, huge game, Packers versus Bears. We're keeping our fingers crossed. Looks like we could do it, but it's going to be a tough one. So many injuries.
Absolutely.
But first,
it's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
The case is a long way from over. That's a message from the defense team from Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan. The jury came back with a split verdict. Guilty on the obstruction charge, the most serious one. That's a felony. The jury found Judge Dugan did obstruct federal agents trying to make an immigration arrest inside the Milwaukee County Courthouse in April. The jury found Dugan not guilty on the concealment charge, which is a misdemeanor. Defense attorney Stephen Biskupic questions that split decision.
But that's why we asked for the post-trial briefing. Judge hasn't set a sentencing date, so obviously he's going to take this seriously as well. And I would just say the case is a long way from over.
Dugan now faces up to 5 years in prison at sentencing. Meanwhile, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss just put out a statement today saying if Judge Dugan doesn't resign immediately, the Assembly will begin impeachment proceedings. There is no indication right now Judge Dugan will step down. State Supreme Court suspended her from the bench for the duration of the court proceedings.
The wait, meanwhile, continuing for the full release of the Jeffrey Epstein files, which is, under a recently signed bill in Washington, required today. That full release of all files connected to Epstein is under this bill, set to be released today. But earlier this morning, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche was on Fox News and seemed to indicate while many files will be released before the end of the day, not all of them will, citing concerns over victim privacy.
I expect that we're going to release more documents over the next couple of weeks. So today, several hundred thousand. And then over the next couple weeks, I expect several hundred thousand more.
This partial release would not comply with that bill, though it's unclear what, if any, repercussions would come about if all of the documents do not, in fact, come out today. We heard from USA Today Justice Department correspondent Aisha Bagchi in our top of the hour news. She adds that even a partial release would widen the public's view of what the government already knows about Epstein.
So you can just imagine the trove of documents that the Justice Department should have. When you're talking about all the interviews that they conduct, it might involve very small details of witnesses talking about people they saw with Epstein, suspicions that they had.
So we're awaiting that release, which is expected at least in some capacity later today. Meanwhile, at the White House, the president expected to make an announcement. It does appear that announcement is related to drug prices and not anything connected to the Epstein list. So that is expected later today.
Well, does it seem everyone you come in contact with these days is sick? Yeah, us too.
Chills, muscle aches, sneezing, respiratory issues. Welcome to cold and flu season, just in time for Christmas. According to data from Walgreens, provided exclusively to Good Morning America, demand for over-the-counter cold medicines and at-home flu and COVID tests have jumped 61% over the past 2 weeks. New York is dealing with some of the country's highest numbers. The State Department of Health cites nearly 1,400 flu hospitalizations statewide this week.
ABC Sherry Preston there. I bet demand for Kleenex and Lysol wipes is up as well.
Yeah, I imagine if I were to walk down to the Walgreens, that's about a 2-minute trot from our studios here, and were to go in that aisle, I'd be seeing some things not in stock right now. It was interesting. We had Dr. Ben Weston on yesterday.
And yeah.
We asked him about where we are in Wisconsin with our flu level specifically. I was surprised to hear him say his findings are that we're low now because seeing things going around. So that number probably this week, as we checked in next week, will be on the rise.
Yeah, he said it is on the rise right now, but it's technically low. Yeah, I think also at Walgreens, you can pick up a Get Well card.
Oh, yes, those are in stock.
We're coming up on 12:15. Up next, humans versus AI in the job force. Right now, the question facing millions of Americans isn't just where to work, it's whether humans can still compete at all. Technology is reshaping nearly every corner of the economy, from factory floors and classrooms to hospitals and offices. You have artificial intelligence and robotics doing work once handled by us, the people. And yet, people still need paychecks. New data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics offers a better picture of where jobs are growing, where they're disappearing, and what skills still matter in a tech-heavy world. ABC's Jim Ryan has been digging into the numbers and the human impact behind them. Jim, which jobs are growing right now and which ones are most at risk of being replaced by AI or automation?
Here's how quickly this whole thing is changing. The Bureau of Labor Statistics earlier this year put out a list of the fastest growing occupations. Top of the list, wind turbine service technicians. Number two, solar panel installers. Number three, nurse practitioners. But given that the administration is sort of moving away from alternative energy sources, I'm not sure that the wind turbine service technicians will be the job of the future, but still, that's what's topping the chart from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, fastest growing occupations.
So then what do we know about, let's say, looking 10, 20 years down the road, where could we be for the job of the future?
I'm not so sure that it's a job sector as much as it is a job feel, right? Because the one thing that people can do that AI can't do is think creatively, think strategically, show compassion for fellow workers, for bosses, for customers. So if you can maximize those skills, then you may set yourself up for some job security. LinkedIn has those suggestions. Learn to work with technology, not necessarily against it, because AI is here to stay. It's not going anywhere, Adam.
How quickly, Jim, do you think this shift is happening? And are employers moving faster than some workers can adapt?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're seeing that happen in a dramatic way. Challenger Gray and Christmas, the recruiting firm, said that in October, the tech sector itself had 33,000 job cuts. That's compared to 5,600 in September. That's almost a six-fold increase in just that one-month span. So technology is one place that you're seeing a lot of AI and a lot of automation taking over. Retailers, you're seeing a lot of automation in that sector too. 2,400 job cuts in October, just slightly down from the prior month. So there are still some areas out there that show promise.
So when it comes then to prepping the next generation of employees, as we've talked a lot about, to work alongside AI, work with artificial intelligence, is there a growing concern that we may be overcorrecting perhaps? Because at the end of the day, people are still going to interact with other people on the job in some capacity. Are we backseating the importance of interpersonal communication to catch up with how fast AI moves?
Well, I think you're right. Yeah. And so, yeah, people need to kind of maximize those soft skills, if you will, the things that make us human, the things that AI and technology simply cannot do and never will be able to do. So, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's a fast moving industry, a fast moving economy, but people have to work, people have to eat. And now they're competing against AI for a smaller number of jobs.
Jim, I'm curious for ABC News how much the network with radio is using AI and what you guys are doing, because I'll tell you what, here at Good Karma Brands, we have definitely embraced it. In fact, our boss, the head of the company, has basically said in one of our meetings, he said, I'm not going to replace you all with machines. Your jobs aren't going to be eliminated because of that. But he did say you all need to jump on board, because if not, if you aren't using AI, we might have somebody else come on who does. That was ultimately the message, that we want to embrace this and we need you all to jump on.
Sure. Well, right. Embrace it. Accept it, at least. Tolerate it. Learn about it. If you push it away, then you may find yourself on the outside. But I mean, it's in radio, it's always been a concern, I think, right? I remember applying for my very first job or going for a job interview at a radio station in about 1983. And walking in, and the program director was so proud of the new automation system. They had these giant wheels that were turning cartridges and putting them into the slot, you know, playing this thing. I thought, well, there goes radio. I guess that's not a career path. Well, 40 years later, it still is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to adjust, have to learn, and have to be adaptable.
Are you guys using it at ABC News Radio?
Very little, and not as far as I know, you know, in terms of automation or in terms of AI. There may be some areas, and it could be that we're using it without even knowing it, too.
Yeah.
That's possible. Jim, something else that I've been wondering as we talk more the last year especially about this. I remember a few years ago, I think it was during the 2016 presidential campaign, there was a lot of talk of UBI or universal basic income. And then that talk kind of died down a little bit. We haven't heard it much the last few years. With the quickening pace, though, of AI replacing a lot of these jobs, you mentioned some of the numbers. Could we see in the next few months, the next year or two, a reignition of that conversation of ensuring that people, if they are being replaced, have some base income? Because as you said, people still have to eat. They still have to have a place to live.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I think some of the big layoffs in the big companies, Google and Apple and some of these companies that have had big layoffs this year, have tried to move those people, instead of laying them off, into other positions within the same company. So it's kind of a take it or leave it situation. Either adapt, work on in others some of their position in our company, or you might find yourself on the outside. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that may be a conversation in the future.
We've talked a lot about people already in the workplace and working for a while now. But what advice do you have or does the data offer for young people who are just entering the workforce or who are about to graduate college this year and will hopefully be getting a job after that?
Well, one word, flexibility. Yeah, I mean, if you're still in college or you're still in high school and you're looking at careers out there, you may want to fashion your training and your education towards some position that seems to have more promise. I know a lot of people try to do that. It's hard to predict. In fact, Bureau of Labor Statistics had a hard time predicting that for this year. But yeah, being adaptable, being open, and being and showing yourself for the skills that you have, as opposed to trying to compete with something that's here and here to stay.
Right after I asked that question, I thought there's probably some college kids who are like, what do you mean? What I'm doing is I'm going to AI and saying, what are the best jobs for me right now? Where do I go to get that application? And what's the best way for me to fill it out? And AI is probably delivering
the answers.
They're
fighting fire with fire, yeah. Using AI to build that resume, AI to find the jobs, and AI to apply for them. So sure, one way to use AI, if not against itself, then with itself.
Yeah, AI changing things quickly. That's ABC's Jim Ryan. Thanks so much, Jim. Have a great weekend.
You too.
So not at work, but outside of work. And I think I told the story once before here to Greg. But my first kind of jumping on board with this, because Greg was telling me that he uses it a lot for recipes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so one day I wanted something really quick. I wanted a spicy soup. So I went onto AI and I said, can you get me a recipe for a spicy soup that doesn't have a lot of ingredients? Because that's something I didn't want it to take forever. So sure. If you have 20 ingredients, by the time you chop all those up, it just takes so long. So sure enough, it was like, you bet, here it comes. And very quickly, I got a couple of options. And I said, okay, I like a couple of these, but I don't want it to taste smoky. I don't want fire roasted. I just want it spicy. Okay, you want a spicy soup that's fresh. Yes, yes, please. Here you go. And then I thought, okay, great, I love this. Can you create a shopping list for me? It created a shopping list very, very fast. I'm thinking, okay, I do kind of like this. Maybe I'm going to be popping on more. So I'm in the grocery store. I'm getting everything that's on my list. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, something seems wrong. Like something seems very much so missing. Then I realize, is there no broth in the soup?
Uh-oh. Yeah, kind of important.
There's got to be broth, right? I check the list again, nothing. So then I actually go back to AI and I say, it seems like there should be broth. Is broth missing? And AI was like, oh my goodness, yes. Yes, it is. You need the broth. And so that just kind of cracks me up because, let's be honest, AI is not perfect, mm-hmm. but AI is here. It's here to stay, and it can help, but you can't totally rely on it.
You still need that human oversight, even when you're shopping for groceries.
Yeah, whether it's work or in your personal life. A rare split verdict in the federal trial of Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan. The jury found Judge Dugan guilty of obstruction, but not guilty of concealment. In a nutshell, they found her guilty of the most serious charge, the felony, and determined she did obstruct federal agents trying to make an immigration arrest inside the Milwaukee County Courthouse. WISN-TV political director Matt Smith was in the courtroom as that verdict came down. He joins us live now with that inside perspective from the courtroom. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, good afternoon.
So take us to that moment, the moment the verdict was read, because this was interesting. In court, you heard not guilty first, then guilty. What was Judge Dugan's reaction?
It was incredibly fast and rapid. So the jury comes in as they had. The foreperson delivers the slip of paper to Judge Adelman up on the bench, and then he essentially reads it. And as you mentioned, the first verdict was not guilty. The second verdict then was guilty. Judge Dugan did not visibly respond. There was no immediate reaction from her. The sketch artist who was in the front was able to describe to us that she saw perhaps a sigh of relief after that first verdict was read, but then immediately tensed back up as the guilty verdict was read. Just immediately stayed in their seats. The judge dismissed the jury, and essentially then that part of the proceeding was over. It all transpired within a matter of seconds.
And what about the jury? How did the jurors seem as the verdict was read? What did they look like?
It was fascinating. We saw those comments to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the jury foreperson said, "We didn't feel good at the end of the night," right? They came in, some looked at Judge Dugan, some didn't. They were pretty stoic. There was some animation on their faces during the trial, actively listening. They were much more somber, I guess, to say, knowing what decision they were delivering and the implications of this high-profile case.
And now as we look forward, Matt, there's sort of two angles we can go here. First, the likelihood that some sort of formal appeal will be filed by Dugan's legal team at some point. Meanwhile, the new news out today, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss putting out a statement saying if Judge Dugan does not step down, we will take steps, we, the legislative body, to impeach Judge Dugan. So first on the appeal, when do you think we could see that formal written appeal filed on her obstruction conviction?
So they've technically filed it immediately after the verdict was read. This is the briefing period that Judge Adelman has set up. So this motion is already in process. And what can happen in federal court, essentially what Judge Dugan's legal team is saying, is, Judge, we want you to reverse this guilty verdict and make it not guilty. So the defense team is going to file their briefs. There'll be a couple weeks for the prosecution to file their briefs. The defense can respond, and then Judge Adelman will issue his ruling first and foremost. And that's why we don't see a sentencing date scheduled, because Judge Adelman is going to go through this process first. Legal experts I've talked to says this is highly unlikely. It usually does not happen where a judge intervenes like this. It has happened before, but this is now the case that Judge Dugan's legal team is initially going to be making, that Judge Adelman himself should reverse this guilty verdict, and they're going to lay all of their arguments out in the filings in the upcoming weeks.
And you've got those calls right now for Dugan to step down immediately, including from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, as Adam mentioned. How serious is Voss's messaging?
Yeah, I mean, it is very serious. So there's kind of, at least as I understand it now, and there are probably smarter people listening who may know better, that this gray area that we're in, that yes, she is now a convicted felon. A convicted felon cannot be an elected official, run for office in Wisconsin. So that clearly impacts her role as an elected official, a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. The question now is in kind of this limbo as it goes through this appeals process before the sentencing. What does that mean? So Republican leaders in the assembly, as you mentioned, just came out and said, well, listen, Judge Dugan, if you don't resign, if you don't make that clear that you are resigning, we are going to begin impeachment efforts, which is a power that the legislature holds in the legislature. That would require a majority of a vote in the assembly, which appears would be likely. Republicans control the assembly, but it would require a trial and then a 2/3 vote in the state Senate to actually certify that impeachment.
Would there be any input from Governor Evers at all on this?
We have not heard any yet. The governor, though, has no power in this. This is a legislative function, to the best of my understanding. So the governor can't necessarily remove a sitting judge and take power himself. We haven't heard him weigh in. It will be curious to see if and when the governor does his position on this, as we're starting to see all of this reaction, both from the local and national level.
I have my own thoughts on this, and obviously the defense team is asking this question right now, but I think some people in the general public are asking it. How can the jury find Judge Dugan guilty of the most serious charge, obstruction, but not guilty of concealment? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and Steve Buscemi in his in the post press conference made that very point that they don't understand that, and I think that kind of signaled what part of their argument may be for the judge. But it was fascinating last night, guys, as the jury was asking several questions. The questions were related to both the misdemeanor and the felony about whether Judge Dugan needed to know the name Eduardo Flores Ruiz, that is who they were there for. Whether she needed to know the agents were there for him, or whether she needed to know that his name was on that administrative warrant. For the misdemeanor charge, the judge said yes, she needed to know that name. That's what they found not guilty. For the felony, he gave a different answer, and it was a little more convoluted. It wasn't directly a yes or directly a no, and that is the charge they found her guilty on.
As the appeals process then plays out, Matt, do you think that could be something that Dugan's legal team hones in on, that sort of split ruling from the judge?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've kind of saved some nuggets along the way. And I think Steve Buscemi even indicated that they were prepared for a potential decision like this. So there have been legal arguments that they've kind of left stay that they can bring back. And he likely seemed to indicate that this split verdict decision will be part of what they will be arguing before Judge Adelman.
As you were on verdict watch last night, I'm kind of wondering what the thought process was for you, because I saw the note from our newsroom all of a sudden that, okay, they ordered pizza, they're getting pizza. And I thought, okay, I think the verdict is coming tonight. Were you guys thinking like that as well?
We were, yeah. So, like, you always try to predict what the jury is doing, right, and what their thought process is. And Judge Adelman last night was of the mindset, we're going to let the jury do its thing. We're going to ask if they wanted dinner, and we're just going to kind of let them go and not impose any time limits or invade too much. And the jury kind of dictated how this schedule went last night, saying, yes, now we want pizza, which was clearly a good indication that they were close. The assumption was, right, that if they were so far apart on both of these charges, they would go home, get a rest, and then come back in the morning and convene and try to rehash it out. And clearly, 6 hours after deliberation started, they came to these verdicts.
Yeah, and you never know what's going to happen, because all of a sudden, once you start getting questions, I mean, that can get lengthy. And there was more than one question, then a second question, then the third question. But yeah, I'm right there with you. When they said, no, we don't want to go home and come back tomorrow, you thought, okay, something's happening quickly. I was curious, though, what kind of pizza they get.
You know, I didn't. That is, we were all trying to figure that out. I didn't. No one saw the boxes go in. Some people could smell the pizza, and I think some others ordered pizza. Some of the reporters and people in the courthouse, because all of a sudden it escalated into almost an all-night affair. Right there until the verdict came in past 8:30. So those are kind of the fascinating, you know, behind the scenes.
Yes.
Things. There's just a lot of standing around. The judge, you know, came out of his chambers a couple times and was talking with folks in the gallery. And there's just a lot of, you know, just waiting and anticipation on all sides as the jury is doing their thing. And nobody has any idea what they're doing behind those closed doors.
It was fascinating. A huge case. And it is not over yet. WISN TV political director Matt Smith, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it this week.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
12:49 coming up next, Week in Review. A weekend of tragedies, the Emu case solved, the Dugan verdict reached, and more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
Stepping in front is Sertan with the pick, and Watson was hurt.
No.
Does not look good for game-wrecking linebacker Micah Parsons either. We're hearing ACL.
No.
It's no surprise.
The Bucs are their own worst enemies.
Down goes Texas. The Badgers will play in the Final Four.
I refuse to lose.
Meanwhile, in Australia, police say at least 10 people have been killed as two gunmen opened fire.
Thousands gathered on the first night of Hanukkah for a celebration filled with light and music in honor of the shooting victims.
Rabbi Eli, who died, his wife and my wife were really good friends.
We are joined on the hotline by U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.
I listened to the interview, Senator. We talk about partisanship, and your comments sound so partisan.
It's our fault the premiums are increasing. Nothing could be further from the truth. And it's being misreported that way, too. So, yeah, it is frustrating.
The son of Hollywood director Rob Reiner has reportedly been arrested after Reiner and his wife were found dead inside their Los Angeles home last evening.
Part of the legacy that Rob Reiner is leaving, Greg, is so many other things that he's really helped shape comedy and drama.
The lines that he's responsible for.
Have fun storming the castle.
You can't handle the truth.
The Judge Hannah Duken case. How much discretion does a judge get?
Make a record. She acted too impulsively, and that may be the most damning evidence against her.
The Department of Justice is open.
Jeff Wagner.
I think the big question to me, Vince, is going to be, do you put Hannah Duken on the witness stand?
Milwaukee Public Schools announcing a major update.
Our teams completed lead stabilization work at 99 schools.
What a relief. Imagine you're eating then.
What is that?
It's just a little friend, John. A raccoon falls from the ceiling.
Oh, what?
A customer tried to grab the raccoon and was bitten by it.
We got an update from Slinger Police. We would like to announce that the emu theft from March of this year has been solved. The emu is safe at Slinger PD until he can be reunited with his family.
Let's go to what's coming in everyone's mailbox right now. Now wave mine for those that
I just
are watching.
Oh, you brought yours.
I brought it because my laptop died and I need the data now. So I opened my top property tax bill where every dollar goes. The biggest chunk of that dollar is going to MPS now.
Milwaukee Brewers All-Star Christian Yelich is stepping up to the plate once again, this time for the community.
It's just a small gesture and a small part of just trying to improve people's lives and help out in any way we can. After 6 hours of deliberation, the jury handed down a split verdict, finding Judge Duken guilty of the more severe felony charge of obstruction while acquitting her on misdemeanor concealment.
How can you find guilty there and not guilty on the first?
Judge Duken faces up to 5 years in prison.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The manhunt for the suspect in the killing of two students at Brown University and MIT professor leading to a New Hampshire storage facility where police say 48-year-old Claudio Neves Valente was found dead.
TikTok, Jack, we call him. It was pretty good.
TikTok's getting bad!
It appears there's a deal.
User data will be stored by Oracle, and TikTok's algorithm will be retrained to protect against outside manipulation.
Our grand producer, I should say our grande, but that's different. That's about size. And she's tiny. Gina, you love coffee so much. Will this change any of your habits?
I want to say yes, but no.
What are we doing?
Walk a week.
What is that?
Make a record.
Sorry, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
That's a Week in Review brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text WEEK to the Sony Unlimited talk and text line at 855-616-1620 if you'd like to hear it again.